Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here is a new fault line in the health reform debate created by the Supreme Court decision. It allowed states to decide for themselves whether to join the expanded Medicaid program that the law includes. States with Republican governors are beginning to announce that they will not. The largest of them so far is Florida under Governor Rick Scott.
It's not free. I mean, it's $1.9 billion a year.
Right.
You're still paying it. I mean, the Florida taxpayers are paying federal taxes. On top of that, they're only going to cover all of it in the first 3 years. Then Florida taxpayers are going to be on the hook.
Yeah, but for only, what, 10%?
But eventually we'll be on the hook for, 45% of it. So, government health care programs everywhere in the world do three things. They promise you the world. They say, oh, we're going to cover everything. Then what they do is they run out of money and they underpay hospitals, doctors, and guess what happens? They don't want to take care of you. There's fewer of them, just like what's happened in England and Canada, places like that.
But some of Governor Scott's numbers there may not be accurate. Florida has an estimated 4 million people who are uninsured. If it's like other states, about half of them would likely qualify for the expanded Medicaid. That would be 2 million Americans with jobs, most of them, who make above the poverty line but under $30,000 a year for a family of four. The federal government will pick up 100% of the cost for the first 3 years, 90% after that. But still, Scott would let perhaps 2 million people remain uninsured in the name of fighting the president's plan. So will Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin.
Very clearly, the court pointed out that the law is upheld constitutionally, but it also pointed out very clearly it's a massive tax increase. It's what we've said all along. This is a tax increase, and at a time when we're trying to help the private sector create more jobs in our state and across America, a massive tax increase is not the right answer.
He says a massive tax increase. The tax, as the Supreme Court described it, would only be on the people who choose not to be insured. One unanswered question as we go state to state, what will Governor Christie do in New Jersey, where an estimated 234,000 New Jerseyans would qualify for this Medicaid paid for by Washington? With me now is Ovik Roy, who writes the Apothecary Healthcare blog for Forbes and is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He generally opposes the Obama law. Hi, Ovik. Thanks for coming back on.
Nice to be back, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you. Do you support what these governors are doing? Do you want to make a case for this?
Well, I'd say a couple things. First of all, it's largely rhetorical at this stage because the Medicaid expansion doesn't really go into effect until 2014. So what the governor's stance on whether they'll implement this portion of the law now is not as relevant as what they'll do in 2014. And obviously between now and then there's going to be a minor election. So I think that's going to play a big role in how this all plays out.
The governors say this will increase their costs. But the program is free to the states for the first 3 years, assuming Congress doesn't change it. Then 90% covered by Washington for as far as the law is written now, all of time. So when Governor Scott says this is going to cost him $1.9 billion a year, where does that number come from?
Yeah, so I think the clip that you played from Governor Scott was pretty revealing, because the real concern that a lot of these governors have is, yes, according to the law as written, the federal government's picking up the tab in the early stages and 90% of the tab in sort of the mid stages. But what happens after you get outside that 10-year window? And remember that the federal fiscal situation is slated to deteriorate pretty considerably from 10 years from now relative to today. It's already not so great. So I think a lot of the state governors feel we're gonna get committed to this program, and then because the program is jointly run by the federal government and the states have very limited flexibility once they sign up in terms of how they can modify their eligibility requirements, modify the way they run the program, because the HHS, the Washington Department of Health and Human Services, it blocks a lot of modest changes that state governments might try to implement to optimize their programs.
But the nonpartisan site PolitiFact fact-checked Scott's claim of $1.9 billion, decided that it was false and wildly high, that even when it goes down in 2020, so that's 8 years from now, to 90% federal coverage of these new Medicaid recipients, that it would only cost Florida about $500 million. And so if that's the real number, what a bargain for a state to be able to cover perhaps 2 million uninsured people at the price of $500,000.
Half a billion dollars.
Yes.
Yeah, for $500,000, it would be a bargain, but $500,000, you know, given the state of state budgets, you have to remember that unlike the federal government, which can borrow money from China, states can't do that. So states have to typically run balanced budgets, and so $500 million to a state is actually a pretty significant amount of money.
Well,
and again,
I don't know what Florida's budget is. New York State's budget is over $100 billion. New York City's budget alone is $68 billion. So to add just $500 million more to cover 2 million uninsured people, again, if that's the right number, that doesn't sound like a bargain.
When you're talking about a state budget where every $500 million counts, it does matter. And remember, there's also the long-term liability of what happens after that that 10-year window is out, and then you're talking about the next 10 years. Will that federal government backstop still be there? I think a lot of state governments worry that it won't be.
But according to the Supreme Court, they could withdraw. That's 10 years from now. That's 10 years of coverage. And to not join because they would say, well, maybe 10 years from now, they'll stop backing us up. I mean, that's pretty hypothetical, isn't it?
Not particularly given the fiscal situation of the country, right? If we were in flush times that where people felt that these programs could go on indefinitely in their current form, then yes, you might think that. But I think today there's a lot more pessimism and skepticism about the fiscal condition of the country broadly, and also state governments are really, you know, Democratic and Republican governors both are really having to deal with some very difficult trade-offs. I mean, Andrew Cuomo's dealing with the same things here in New York, difficult trade-offs because they can't borrow money. If they run a budget deficit, they've got to either raise taxes or cut spending. So every little bit matters.
How about the moral equation here? Health insurance is a matter of life and death, potentially, for many poor families. There have been studies that show that people without insurance have higher death rates at younger ages, quality of life, too. This is health insurance available free or almost free to your people with those implications. And if the governors find it easy to shrug off as not a moral challenge, at least, because these governors who are coming out are so vociferous that this would be wrong because of the fiscal reasons that you're describing, what about the other side of the moral equation?
Sure, I make a couple of points. First of all, in terms of it being free, it's not free, right? I mean, taxpayers are paying for it. It may be that taxpayers in other states are paying for it, which gives a particular state more incentive to sign on. But it's not like it's the money just come, you know, is
right.
Appears out of the sky and falls onto the ground.
Of course, but from
somewhere.
A governor's perspective, they take federal funds for all kinds of other things.
Sure.
They lobby for them. In fact, roads, bridges, education money, things that go to companies in their state if they're contractors with the federal government. And we don't see them turning around and saying, oh, but this is going to cost the federal taxpayers from all the states. For some reason, only covering your uninsured population seems to fall into this category.
Well, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, Medicaid is becoming the number one budget item for most states.
That's
so it's
true.
Not some trivial amount of money. So every meaningful change in the program has huge impacts on their budgets. And as we mentioned before, that really matters to states because they can't do deficit spending. And on the moral point, the thing to remember is that health insurance is not the same thing as health care. And Medicaid's health outcomes are actually very, very poor. In many studies show that Medicaid, in fact, overwhelming data shows that Medicaid health outcomes are far worse than those for private insurance. And comparing them to the uninsured, there's data going both ways. Some studies show that there's some impact, some very modest impact, modestly, for people who are on Medicaid versus being uninsured. Other studies show that Medicaid patients do worse than the uninsured because many of the people who are uninsured actually pay doctors directly and get better care and are able to see doctors as a result. The big problem with Medicaid is Medicaid massively underpays doctors and hospitals for their care. So a lot of doctors don't take Medicaid patients because they get paid so little to see a Medicaid patient, they can't actually afford to do it because it doesn't cover their time and their costs.
My guest on WNYC is Ovik Roy. He writes the Apothecary Healthcare blog for Forbes, and he's a fellow at the Manhattan Institute think tank. Let's take New Jersey as an example, and let me throw one more number into the economic mix. The state spends about $1 billion a year on charity care for the uninsured. If everyone is insured, theoretically at least, that big expense goes away. That's on top of the feds paying 100% and then 90% of the new Medicaid recipients. If you're the governor of New Jersey, you have to factor that $1 billion and whatever gets reduced from that $1 billion in. And I don't know what that would be in the case of Florida. I haven't seen that fact check. But yeah. I would imagine in the case of a state like Florida, which is much bigger than New Jersey, has many more uninsured people relying on charity care, that would probably wipe out the entire $500 million that PolitiFact says it would cost the state to expand the Medicaid rolls.
Yeah, so actually the data goes in the opposite direction on that. So we have experience from Massachusetts and also from Oregon, from the famous Oregon Medicaid experiment. So in Massachusetts, emergency room utilization actually went up post-reform. And in Oregon, same thing. Emergency room utilization went up for the Medicaid population that they studied. And the reason why is because a lot of these Medicaid patients, again, they have this card that says they have health insurance, but because they can't get doctor's appointments, because Medicaid so drastically underpays physicians, they end up still going to the emergency room for care. You know, we have this conception that all the people who go to the emergency room are doing so because they're uninsured and want the free care. Actually, about half of the people who go to the emergency room with uncompensated care are Medicaid patients who go there because they have no ability to see a doctor, and so they just go to the ER because it's the only way for them to actually get access to health care.
And when they do that, Medicaid does not cover that cost?
It pays for some of the cost, yeah. So, I mean, that's part of the thing, is actually Medicaid will pay for the cost because Medicaid isn't, by law, isn't allowed to charge higher copays to discourage Medicaid patients from going to the ER versus seeing conventional physicians. And but because Medicaid's fees are so low, hospitals lose a lot of money on those patients.
So what do you think of the Massachusetts experience with this same system? I hear you just describing why some people are still going to emergency rooms for what amounts in part to charity care. But most of what I've read is quite positive, that it's resulted in many more people having insurance. Only 1.5% pay the famous penalty, or is it a tax, rather than buy insurance under the mandate. And health insurance costs have risen more slowly in Massachusetts than other states, presumably because everyone is in the pool, reducing the burden on insurance companies. Do you think it's not working under the Romney plan in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I think some things that really get forgotten in this discussion of Massachusetts is what Massachusetts was like before 2006, before the reforms in Massachusetts were implemented. So before 2006, Massachusetts had a pretty dysfunctional insurance market, despite the fact that actually the number of people who are uninsured in Massachusetts is very low relative to the country prior to reform. So Massachusetts had a relatively low uninsured rate to begin with, so it was a very small population that you were trying to address. That's number one. And number two, those people who were uninsured in Massachusetts were dealing with a dysfunctional private insurance market because of Dukakis-era reforms, which, you know, now we understand all these things, right? They required all insurers to issue policies regardless of pre-existing conditions, and they had a community rating like we do in New York State, where young people have to pay much more for their insurance to subsidize the insurance policies for older individuals. Those two policies, without an individual mandate, basically destroyed the private insurance market because young, healthy people opted out of the market because insurance was too expensive for them. So what the Romney reforms did in Massachusetts is they really did a lot to rebuild the individual market. So people who needed to buy health insurance for themselves were able to do so in a much more cost-effective way. And that's what really drove the reduction in the insurance population in Massachusetts, along with, they didn't expand Medicaid in Massachusetts. They took the existing Medicaid program, made sure that everyone signed up for it who was eligible. So a large part of the reforms in Massachusetts really revolved around introducing a more, you know, better market mechanisms into a broken insurance market, and you know, so that's very different from the national situation where most states don't have those problems, and so the national health law moves the market to a less functional state rather than a more functional state.
Well, the discussion goes on, the debate goes on, and we will see what actually happens in 2014. As our guest pointed out, all these governors staking out positions, maybe largely governors who want to run for national office, I don't know, you know, perhaps in the case of Rick Scott, perhaps in the case of Scott Walker, perhaps in the case of Chris Christie, who hasn't declared yet whether he will join the expanded Medicaid program for the state of New Jersey. It actually is just rhetoric until 2014, when they could actually do it. But this conversation is taking place right now with Scott Walker on Meet the Press from the clip we played, with Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, on Fox News Sunday from the clip we played, et cetera, et cetera. And we thank Ovik Roy, who writes the Apothecary Healthcare blog for Forbes and is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute think tank, for talking over some of this with us. Ovik, I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Look forward to seeing you again.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we will introduce a new Brian Lehrer Show Facebook photo project around the history of activism in New York City with the Museum of the City of New York. Stay with us.